You are listening to Mahogany Says Radio Show with Mahogany Silverring, mahoganysilverring.net. With the death of her vampire mate, Dominique Leroy, the hybrid vampire queen of New Orleans, must choose a new mate. Will it be the best friend, Asmodeus, the vampire who craves her power? Azazel, the human wizard with firepower? Or Jason, her were-leopard guardian? With her ties to the magical and shifter communities, she becomes a threat to the Vampire Blood Council. They give her an ultimatum. Turn the human wizard into a vampire or die a traitor's death. Will she choose love or loyalty? The Grand Dame of Bourbon Street by Mahogany Silverring. Available on Amazon in both Kindle and paperback. Get your copy today. Henry Santana, a misunderstood millionaire with a playboy reputation, will do whatever it takes to transform historic Newport, Rhode Island's waterfront into the world's largest five-star resort community. Victoria Hathaway, an introverted bookseller, is fearful of losing all she holds dear, a thriving business along Newport Harbor and her multi-generation colonial home that stands in the way of the resort community. Sparks fly when Victoria meets Henry, a handsome stranger, until she discovers he's the one who is threatening to take her land. Desperate and determined, Victoria struggles to save her home and her livelihood while ignoring her growing attraction for the man who threatens to destroy it all. The Prodigal's Desire, Book 1 of the Seaside Desire series by author Valerie Lynn. Available on Amazon in both Kindle and paperback. Get your copy today. Who's Daddy? A Paranormal BDSM Romance by Mahogany Silverring. Keiko Reed finds what she never expects in the arms of a werewolf Daddy Dom, an alpha of the Wolf House MC. Fleeing her abusive ex from a rival MC, she runs onto Gerald Brothers. He takes her under his protection and believes she is the one that he has been searching for. He claims her in every way and gives her the sacred bite of the werewolf. Soon after, he is betrayed by a club member to the rival MC, putting not only Keiko, but the club and the small town of Golden Tip, Colorado, at risk. Will Gerald go to war with the rival MC, risking everything for his precious little one? Wolf Daddy, a Paranormal BDSM Romance by Mahogany Silverleaf. Available on Amazon. Get your copy today. You're listening to the Mahogany Says Show with your host, Mahogany Silverleaf. MahoganySilverring.net. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us tonight on the Mahogany Says Show. I'm your host, Mahogany Silverring, and we have a fantastic, or fangtastic, live read for you tonight. I will be reading from my vampire novel. The first one, it is The Grand Dame of Bourbon Street, which is the first book in the Dominique Leroy vampire series. And book two is The Blood Bonds of Dominique. So, without further ado, let's begin on chapter two of The Grand Dame of Bourbon Street, just to give you a little bit of Dominique Leroy's background. Chapter 2, Toussaint Plantation. From the moment I stepped onto the Toussaint Plantation in Orleans Parish, fear clung to me like a moth on a tree. Though I'd promised my mama I would be strong, I still fought the day they came for me and pulled me away from her arms. I just couldn't let go. My parents were all I knew. I didn't have any friends. None of the other children on my father's plantation wanted me to play, calling me a half-breed. I hate those words. Makes me sound like a breed of animal. Being a slave was difficult enough. Being a mixed-race child is like being stuck between two worlds, and neither one wants you. Too light for one and too dark for the other. At least this time, I'm only tied with rope, not shackled. I cry and shout as I'm put on the wagon, but my mama doesn't cry. She just stands there, poised and beautiful. Only a hint of a smile. She won't satisfy them with her tears as they carry away her only child. I memorize her face, lest I forget what she looked like. It's dark out, and I can't see much of the surrounding grounds. After being taken off the wagon and untied, I am taken to a room beneath the house. My heart is pounding in my chest, hurting so bad I can barely breathe. Unimaginable horror is the fate I fear awaits me in this place. I wonder what this new master does with the young girls. There were other girls like me inside the room. Their eyes look dull and their expressions blank. They hardly seem to notice I'm even in the room from after the door slams behind me. One girl is rocking back and forth in a corner, shaking her head. She looks like about my age. I feel sorry for her and I walk toward her. No, leave her be. You just gonna scare her even more if you talk to her, says a girl who looks older than her 16 years. What's wrong with her? Missing her ma, I suppose. The other girl shrugs, showing no emotion. That did it. The pain of losing my own mama hits me square in the chest. I swallow hard and continue talking so I won't start crying again. So why are we down here? What is this place? We's food for Master Toussaint, the girl replies. He's going to eat us? My heart pounds in my belly. I feel sick to my stomach and I'm more afraid than I've ever been in my life. Nah. He just take a little blood. Master's not like us. He a demon, I think. She gives me the once-over as if she's trying to figure me out. Blood? What kind of sick man is this? I thought I could handle this, but letting someone drink my blood is out of the question. Having no clue what it all meant, I run to the door and start pounding on it. No one is coming, but I don't know what else to do. The older girls just laugh at me and as they sit back down on the couch near the center of the room. The parlor they lock us in has one small window, sitting room, and a bedroom. Total panic set in. After a few minutes of yelling, the girls are unaffected by my futile cries for help. I resolve that this is the end of my life. I walk over to the girl who spoke to me moments before and plop down next to her on the couch. I feel helpless, alone, terrified. Just when I think I don't have any more tears, one slips down my cheek. It's not so bad. You don't have to work outside. My name is Chef Isabel. What they call you? I look at her, extending my hand in an offer of friendship. Bizette Leroy, enchanté. She doesn't take my hand, but smiles and cocks her head to the side like sometimes dogs do. What you say? That's a lot of names. Enchanté, what that mean? I laugh, not at her, but at myself, realizing just how silly all my manners are now. Izzy will become my first real friend. I'm a real slave now, and it occurs to me that I should hide that I can read and write. This new master may not like it and may beat me or worse. Izzy doesn't seem offended by me laughing. She just stares at me. I try to explain to her in English what I meant and resolve never to speak French out loud again. It means nice to meet you. In French, my papa told me. I smile and the tension in my body eases. Grateful and glad that at least Izzy doesn't make fun of me the way the other slave children did at my papa's plantation. She tells me how pretty she thinks my eyes are and how she's never seen a slave like me before. She says I have eyes like white people. Your papa must be French, like me. He's taught you well, ma petite. A voice from behind the Sikhs. My pulse quickens again, and I jump for turning around to see a man standing in the bedroom's doorway. His eyes are the strangest color of blue I've ever seen. I didn't even realize that the door had been open during all my crying and carrying on. Embarrassment washes over me. He is handsome, from what I can see. His soft features framed by his shoulder-length blonde hair. His eyes an icy blue and his skin pale, waxy, as if he's never seen the sun. He looks nothing like what I expect a demon would look like. But then, I've never seen a demon before. I've seen blue eyes, but not like this. Maybe only demons have this eye color. There is something about him, though. He looks pale, cold. Yet I sense warmth and kindness. I hope he is kind as he looks. I flash a quick smile before averting my eyes to the floor. Oh, how am I supposed to be? I noticed the other slaves didn't look their nest in the eyes when I was at the Botan plantation. Does that same rule apply here? He seems rather pleased to see me. He also doesn't seem to mind that I speak French. In fact, I think he seems impressed by it. I swallow hard. My heart races, but this time, not in fear. Though I am young, I have an instant attraction to him. His pale skin, blue eyes, and golden hair are attractive to me. I stand up as he comes around the couch, stopping in front of me, smiling. He introduces himself as Henri Toussaint. Taking my hand in his and kissing it, a gesture which makes Izzy snicker. And Henri turns and winks at her, and she moves away from the couch to another part of the room. Enchanté, Mademoiselle Leroy, ma petite chocolate. He beams, breathing in my scent. Enchanté, Monsieur Toussaint. I smile, staring into his beautiful eyes. I can't help myself. Never have I seen anyone so beautiful. His wide-eyed, my eyes were wide and mouth agape. I try to compose myself and look down again. But he raises my face to meet his studious gaze. He stares into my eyes and I blush, my cheeks flushing with embarrassment. I am just a girl, but I know the ways of men. He is my master now and he can do whatever he wants with me. My mama told me what men do and the difference between sex with someone you love and being forced to have sex. She prepared me the night before they took me, telling me it will hurt less if I don't struggle. When Henri motions for me to follow him to the bedroom, I'm so excited I can barely breathe. With Henri, something inside me wants to touch him, have him touch me, but he does not touch me that way. He speaks to me, explaining to me what and who he is, a vampire. Never could I have imagined such a creature in my wildest dreams. Even though he looks about 35 years old, he's actually around 60. He loves being a vampire, but it's been difficult to keep up appearances. He hardly leaves the plantation anymore, having his trusted friend Andres go into town for him so no one will question his lack of age. Kind to all of those in his care, he chooses not to hunt or kill humans to feed on. He loves the blood of virgins. It's pure. Intoxicating like wine, he explains. He fed for me that night, and there was no pain in my thigh like I thought there would be. He didn't force me. I came to him on my own. He forces none of us girls. After feeding for me, his mind and senses seemed to sharpen. My blood seems to intoxicate him immediately. He hears my thoughts and those of the other girls in the sitting room. Startled at first, then amazed, he asked me what type of creature I am. Not really sure what he means. Anyone can see I'm human. However, I can sense when someone is not telling me the truth. I can't hear their thoughts, but I sense what they're thinking. I sense it really puzzles him as to what I am. I'm disappointed he doesn't do more than feed from me, and it shows on my face. He laughs at my obvious annoyance. Not yet, ma petite fleur. You are not in full bloom of womanhood. He kisses my forehead. His kiss is warm, and it's enough to satisfy me for now. It takes time to recover from the first feeding, but the wound on my thigh heals in hours, not days. Henri says I'm special, and he takes great care of me, favoring me over the others, who don't seem to mind at all. They are just grateful not to work in the fields for the other slaves. He gives me everything except what I want most, my freedom. I can't take the chance that one day I could lose his favor, so I never ask about my parents or if he'd let me see them. I know I don't have any rights as a slave, but I couldn't have asked for a better master, and I'm content for now to be his favorite. He's kind to me and the other slaves, like my papa was to his slaves. Henri keeps me a virgin, and he does not allow any man to touch me. When I became of age, he doesn't allow me to marry. I can only hope it's because he wants me for himself. But even so, I'm still a virgin. It isn't for my lack of trying, but each time, my blood is all he takes. I don't like this, but I don't question it. I don't want to make him angry with me. Each day I grow to love him more. I haven't taken an interest in any man but him. I was 21 when my papa found me. I was working in the kitchen just like my mama, skilled with medicinal herbs, making tinctures and potions, becoming the unofficial medicine woman to all the slaves on the Toussaint plantation. Seeing my papa through the kitchen window, tears of joy slide down my face. I run out to him and hug him, but my joy soon turns to sorrow when he tells me how my mama died and how he's been searching for me for many years. My father tells me my mama was so enraged after they sold me that she cursed the Bouton family, telling Marie she would lose her child. Then she fled, hoping to find me. Paul took one of his overseers and went after my mother, catching her close to his plantation. Instead of taking her back to the slave quarters and tying her to a tree for a public whipping, he took her to an empty cabin on his plantation instead. There he stripped her, strung her up by her arms, whipped her, and then he raped her. Afterwards, he cuts her loose, and to his surprise, she fights him, demanding him to tell her where I am. Her screams and curses ring in his ears, he refused to tell her. It did not matter to her. He doesn't know the answer. After a few moments of struggling, he gets her off of him, grabbing his knife, and then he stabs her to death. Tears stream down my face. I hope her face haunts Paul for the rest of his life. He deserves for the violent way my mama died. My papa says one of the Bouton slaves told one of his slaves what happened as he was preparing to go on his honeymoon. When he was told, he took off in a rage for the Bouton plantation, leaving his new wife behind. He arrived to find Paul, in shock, sitting at the foot of his wife's bed, her body only a few hours dead, holding his dead infant son in his arms. I snatched him up and punched him, Papa said. Paul snapped out of it, and we fought until I pinned him down and demanded to know where Maybella and you were. Paul confessed to what he'd done. He said he wasn't sure what plantation they sent you to or if you were still in Louisiana. He'd left it to his wife and her brother Timothy. I trusted you, my father raged at Paul. I'm sorry, he cried. I just wanted to make my wife happy. I was good to Maybelle. She didn't need to run away. He claims he loved your mama, but yet sold you away from her. My papa said with tears in his eyes, he was supposed to keep you both safe. By God, I wanted to kill Paul. It would have been easy for me at that moment. I told him you were both my family. I punched him until he collapsed in a heap on the floor. I was heartbroken. So sorry I ever let that happen. Can you forgive me, Lizette? I hugged my papa. Mais oui, papa. There is nothing to forgive. He hugs me back and continues his story. Paul told me your mama cursed him. Said he would lose everything. Seeing his wife and infant son dead, I guess Maybella was right. I demanded to know where Brimella was so I could take her home, give her a proper burial. Papa says Paul took him to where her body was, and my papa took her back to his childhood home and buried her in the family cemetery. Then he set out to find me. Susan divorced me after I buried my sweet Maybella in the family plot on the Leroy plantation. She couldn't believe I had the audacity to bury my nigga wench, as she called her, in the family cemetery. I slapped her so hard she fell to the floor. I have loved no one but your mama since. I had Susan's money, divorce or not, and I kept up the plantation, asking my younger brother to take over while I looked for you. A month ago, I ran across Timothy, Marie's brother, and he told me where they sold you to. We sit at the table, crying and laughing. He wants to bring me home with him, but what am I going to do there that I'm not already doing here? Besides, I'm in love with Henri, and I tell my papa so. Henri told me he loves me too, and though it's not legal for us to marry in Louisiana, being his trusted companion is enough for me. I omit that Henri is a vampire, no use in worrying my papa. I notice the pain and disappointment in his face, and I try my best to reassure him. I would not have met my beautiful Henri if they had not told me. I invite Papa to stay for dinner, and he agrees. He wants to meet Henri and see if he is acceptable for me. Papa tells us how much we remind him of himself and my mama. My papa is so pleased that Henri doesn't gamble and his finances are secure. Convinced that I am in good hands, my papa leaves the Tucson plantation the following morning. He promises to keep in touch, but my mama's death has taken a toll on him, and now that he knew that I was safe and happy, he could rest. He went home, and I later learned he committed suicide. His brother, the uncle I'd never met, wrote me a letter. My uncle buried him next to my mama in the cemetery. My papa never remarried. I didn't find out about his passing until a year after he had visited me and Henri. That's when I changed my name from Lizette to Dominique in honor of him. Chapter 3. Dominique. Still a virgin at 25 years old, I kept a loving and close relationship with Henri, who made me his mistress of the house. The night I became a vampire, there was a blue moon. Henri lay bleeding to death from wounds that were not healing. They attacked him, three slave girls who stabbed him with voodoo cursed knives. I give him my blood, but he takes too much, almost killing me. To save me, Henri shares his blood with me, turning me into a vampire that I am now. He also makes love to me, making me his in every way. The next morning, I expected not to rise until sunset, yet I awoke and discovered I could withstand the sun, despite becoming a vampire the night before. Henri never came out in the daylight, so my first thought is that maybe I'm still human. But I have fangs, and I drank my master's blood last night just as I would drink any tea or water. I go about my daily duties, despite the empty house. However, no one is around outside, no women in the kitchen, no men outside, and no children playing in the yard. I see no one except André Devereaux, Henri's best friend, who comes up running to me out of breath and with a worried look on his face. He's shorter than average for a man standing only at 5'8", with short brown hair and brown eyes. He bends over holding his side as he tries to catch his breath. He is older, in his early 60s, the age Henri would look if he not been a vampire. His skin, tanned by the sun, gives him a golden hue, and he is in excellent shape, being a blacksmith and all. Though his brown hair hauls strands of gray, his body toned and fit from working, rivaling that of any young man in his 30s, is glad to see me, but he is worried about Henri, and he overheard the slaves plotting to kill him. I tell him I've saved Henri's life the night before, admitting, of course, that I've become a vampire now, too. As we speak, I'm suddenly overwhelmed with hunger. Hunger for blood. My stomach and my head aches.
I feel dizzy as the scent of Andre's blood engulfs me. Before I realize what's going on, I attack him, and he slaps me hard. He looks shocked as he realizes what I've become. Unlike Henri, who dies during the day, I'm alive, walking around in the sunlight. It only stings my skin a bit if exposed too long, remedied by wearing long sleeves. I hear his thoughts, something that unnerves me at first. It was the first time I realized I had the ability to do it. He feels sorry for me, and since I saved his best friend, he reluctantly volunteers to feed me. Giving me his arm, I fight for control. As I drink his delicious blood, trying not to kill him, I just need enough to satisfy my aching stomach, and though I'm ravenous, it doesn't take long before I'm satisfied. I thank him, and he just nods blankly, grateful I haven't killed him. New vampires are often insatiable, killing easily, but my restraint is most likely because my humanity seems to have lingered. A sense of urgency comes over me now as I fear the slaves will return, and someone with them. Whoever it is, they want Henri destroyed completely. Although Andres is still a little weak, we quickly place Henri in a large trunk, along with some graveyard dirt, leaving his coffin behind and the truck onto a wagon. Impressed with my new strength as I help him lift the trunk containing Henri, Andres feels better about me and lets his guard down a bit. I sit nervously on the wagon as Andres gathers all of Henri's papers from the desk in his study, including his papers of ownership for me. Papers in hand, Andres joins me on the wagon, taking one last look at the Toussaint plantation before heading into town. I later learn that Horace Babineau, the outspoken Baptist minister who discovered that vampires exist, was hell-bent on destroying us. How he discovered Henri, I don't know. Babineau and his men searched the grounds of the Toussaint plantation. Horace owns a plantation about 20 miles from the Toussaint place. He'd heard rumors that an unholy creature, a demon, owned the Toussaint plantation, feeding off the blood of young slave girls. Andres stopped me and the trunk containing Henri, dropped us off at a hotel in town. I become exhausted. It's as if I haven't slept for a very long time. Perhaps I've done too much for my first day as a new vampire. I settle in and sleep as soon as my head hits the pillow. While I slept, Andres ditched the wagon close to his place, riding a horse into town where he books passage for two to France. Henri tells Andres about a fellow vampire he'd met there before, Asmodeus. When we set sail at 10 o'clock the next morning, Andres comes back to the hotel for some rest. He has no family of his own. His wife Claudia died many years ago after giving birth to their first child. The child lived for a few hours before she died too. Andres, heartbroken, never remarried. I awake to find Henri sitting on the bed next to me, his startling blue eyes gazing lovingly at me. I instantly reach for him, hug and kiss him. It puzzles him why I can withstand the sunlight, but he is happy that I'm alive. Soon I'm hungry again, and Andres, having had his fill of feeding me once today, volunteers to find food for us. He brings back two willing prostitutes from a madam, a former lover of Henri's. I don't care what Henri has done in the past. I love him, and that is all that matters to me. I'm unsure of how I feel about feeding from a total stranger, though. Andres is one thing, but this woman who bares her neck before me is quite another. She smells of rose water, and I've never seen a woman dress so provocatively before. It kind of excites me, and my pleasure doesn't go unnoticed by Henri, who winks and smiles at me. Do what you like, Mama Tite. Ma bouteille au chocolat. I'm sure the lady won't mind. He teases. The woman reaches up and caresses my face. I blush, and the color of my cheeks makes Henri roar at my still human-like quality. I wanted to pout and tell him to stop laughing at me, but my growling, aching stomach won't let me. I didn't think I would ever get used to this kind of hunger, but I have. I summon my resolve and bite into the warm flesh of the woman. Her blood isn't as sweet or as potent as Henri's, but it will do for now. I need only a little and finish much sooner than Henri. And with that, we're going to take a short break and listen to some music. Mahogany Says Show with your host, Mahogany Silvering. MahoganySilvering.net. And we're back. Thank you for joining us again here on the Mahogany Says Show as I continue to read The Grand Dame of Bourbon Street, a Dominique Leroy vampire novel. We send the women back to the madam and make love until dawn, with Andres lying in the next bed pretending not to care about what we're doing. By the time Horace and his men came into town the next morning, we were safely en route to Paris. After asking around, Horace found out that Andres had booked a passage for France for himself and a slave woman. Angry that he's missed us, he swore he would find out if any more creatures like us exist, and hunt them all down. He and his men burned down the Toussaint plantation, telling the sheriff that the heathen slaves were to blame. He claimed they lost their senses and killed their master. Babineau also had to kill some of these crazy slaves who revolted and took possession of those who surrendered, mostly the women and children, as a kindness of his heart. Once in France, Henri and I married. Something we couldn't do in the States. Andres and I take care of things by day while Henri rests. Henri teaches me Spanish besides French. I'm now fluent in both. While in Paris, my sense of smell still detects food. Vampires do not smell food like they smell blood. This is when I learned that I could eat food and blood, raw fruits and vegetables mostly. Much to Henri's delight, we also discover that after exchanging blood, Henri can share my empathic and telepathic abilities, linking us metaphysically. 20 years pass, and Andres dies of old age in Europe, with Henri and I looking after him. He remained a loyal and faithful friend to the end. After his death, Henri and I travel through Asia, our favorite spot being Kyoto, Japan. Keiko Nagahiro, a Japanese housewife with our regular bloodline, loves the high of being a vampire. After me and Henri and I one spring, she had the sense of attraction to us both. He felt the same. Over the years, my process continues to be passed by curious days after having sex with my first woman in Paris. I find I enjoy them almost as much as men. This type of a mutually beneficial relationship forms between us. Keiko gets to experience vampire sex, and we feed from a living donut. Every time we come to Kyoto, we stay in the same type of hotel. A love hotel. Basically, a monument to hedonism. A place where you can rent the room by the hour or stay the night, usually checking in around 10 in the evening. The rooms, just right for couples wanting to spend time together, have a double bed and a television that shows a lot of movies. All the rooms have themes,
from the 70s or the 80s to Hello Kitty S&M rooms, which a kitty chum plus a doll wearing a ball gag, a blindfold, and barbed wire guard about. There are costumes you can rent for role play. Henri frequently rents the S&M room because I just love the spanking horse there. I've had to be submissive for most of my human life, but my dominant nature came out after I became a vampire. Now I'm in charge and I'm only submissive to Henri. We never use our real names for check-ins, always disguising ourselves just in case anything ever happens. I locate the love hotels on the outskirts of town. All of them are high-tech. There's no need for a reception club. They're automated as you check in with a push of a button on the display panel in the lobby. Once you hit the button of the room you want, it issues a paper card with the room number. When you are ready to check out, you take the card, place it in the slot in your room, and hit the total button. It totals the charges, and you place the money in the slot on the panel. The room stays locked until we pay the charge. Henri never uses credit cards for things like this, only cash. I look forward to these visits to Kyoto and send Keiko a text message for her to come and join us. This arrangement has worked well for quite a few years without Keiko's help. Kentaro, a businessman that works for a software company, ever having a clue. Feeding on Keiko is usually after the foreplay, sometimes during sex or afterwards. I lick the blood from a bite I gave Keiko on her breast when I see a shadow sweep past me. Before I knew it, a Japanese blade strikes Henri, severing his head, his body instantly disintegrating into a pile of ash on the floor. Keiko screams her husband's name. I'm usually pretty fast, but being intoxicated on Keiko's blood, I wasn't quite fast enough to stop Kentaro from killing my beloved Henri. Enraged, I use my telekinetic power, throwing Kentaro against the wall with such force it breaks his neck, killing him instantly. Then I turn my pain and anguish on Keiko, who screams and lunges at me. I avert her attack and quickly move around behind her, grabbing her head and snapping her pretty little neck. Such a way. Heartbroken over her dead husband, she tries to kill me. But then, again, I too am heartbroken, though I cannot give in to my emotions now as my husband's ashes lie in a pile not 2 feet away from me. With a quick sweep of the room, I collected all these ashes, putting them in a black vase I spotted in the corner. My mind is spinning even as I try to understand what the hell just happened. I won't cry. No time for tears. Knowing the other guests will think the screams coming from the room are just S&M play. I tie up the lifeless bodies of Keiko and Kentaro. I wonder how Kentaro knew we were there, and better still, how on earth did he get in without either of us noticing until too late? I figured maybe he came in through the vent. I should have sensed him sooner. Why didn't I? Different scenarios race around in my head, but I need to focus more on damage control. I've just killed 2 humans. They weren't innocent, but still, something I just don't go around doing. Japan doesn't take too kindly to vampires. The penalty for harming humans is death or worse. Being buried upside down or starved to near death, revived, then repeat the entire process again, depending on the infraction. Not something I would ever want to endure. Think, damn it. After a few moments, I make the room look like a DS submission scene gone bad. I strip Kentaro, hanging him by his neck above Keiko, her body bound to the spanking horse, naked, and spread eagle, with a leather belt around her neck, giving it a few yanks to look like he strangled her hard enough to break her neck. The police will assume accidental death of the girl and suicide of the man for his guilt in killing him. It happens more than it should with unskilled or untrained participants seeking the thrill of bondage games, thanks to 50 Shades of Grey. I clean off any fingerprints I may have left. Though vampires don't leave fingerprints, I can't take that chance, being that I am still human, too. It's time for me to go home now, to my first home, New Orleans. I'm really glad that we always wear wigs to this hotel, and each time a different one. This time I wore a burgundy-colored short wig that goes well with my skin color. I swiftly survey the room before paying the room charge and go to the airport. I go back to New Orleans, changing my last name from Toussaint to Leroy, my maiden name. I didn't allow myself to grieve or even shed a tear as I fly back to the States. I've arranged for a condo in New Orleans, and only once inside do the tears flow. I cry, it seems, for weeks. Didn't think the tears would ever stop. The pain of losing Henri is so great, I think I may die. I refuse food or blood until Asmodeus, Henri's best vampire friend, forces me to feed. 8 months later, the tears just stop. I'm at peace now in New Orleans. I open a nightclub called the Blood Rose with the help of Asmodeus Dubois. I wanted a safe place for vampires, the old and newly sired, and their human blood donors. I have all the donors screened and tested for bloodborne pathogens, AIDS and hepatitis A through E, which will not kill a vampire, but it does make us sick and weak, like humans suffering from food poisoning. Asmodeus pays most of the renovation costs of an old, empty, flood-damaged building in the quarter, on Rue Bourbon. It's downriver from the most popular tourist places on the upper part of Bourbon Street, in the 700 block next to Marie Laveau's House of Voodoo, and just before the Lavender Line of the local LGBT clubs. You can find just about anything, including the Clover Grill, a 24-hour diner where human and magical creatures alike come for burgers and scrambled eggs at 3 in the morning. Asmodeus also donates money toward the cleaning up of downtown New Orleans, the place that were damaged, still damaged, even years after Katrina. His gift to me. While I appreciate his help, it really bothers me when he tells me I must move on and choose another vampire mate. After being with someone over a century and then losing them, well, you just don't get over something like that. At least, I did. Asmodeus joins me in New Orleans as soon as I told him of Henri's death. He's a powerful vampire, not quite 300 years old, possessing not only speed and strength, but he can levitate, almost flying completely. He's 6'3" and very handsome, with his pale skin, dark hair, and steel blue eyes. His manner is of someone born in high society, genteel, but arrogant and sometimes bordering on obnoxious. He became a vampire at 40 years old. He can cloak himself by clouding the minds of his victims. He can seduce his prey, preferring that they give themselves to him willingly. Being more of a lover, we call him mort douce, which means sweet death. His victims would die willingly, having the orgasm of their lives. Though he seduced many women, human and vampire, I'm immune to his hypnotic gaze. The fact alone endears me to him even more. I mean, I will admit, but I'm not that impressed. He's like most of the vampires I've met. They make little impression on me. I guess a girl needs more than smooth talk, blood, sex, and violence. And then again, I just never connected with any other vampire the way I did with only Toussaint. Chapter 4. Asmodeus. From the moment I met Asmodeus Dubois in Paris in the late 1800s, he fell in love with me at first glance, or so I gathered from his thoughts. There are two words that describe Asmodeus: smooth operator, just like the song by Sade. Charming and handsome, he has women and men eating out of his hand, except for me. Born of nobility, yet he is not noble. He does everything for his own satisfaction. If he does something noteworthy, it's not because he takes great joy in doing for others, but more for the leverage it gives him. Once he realized I could hear his thoughts, he began to shield them. I can still catch a thought or two, but mostly his face tells me all I need to know. Henri, being very close to Asmodeus, often shares me with him, pardon me, sexually. I did whatever Henri asked me to. I never felt forced, and I enjoyed them both. The three of us became inseparable. When Henri and I fled New Orleans, it was to Asmodeus' villa in Paris, where we were married shortly after arriving. Asmodeus acts like I belonged to him ever since he joined me here in New Orleans, and I picked up on his thoughts about it a few weeks ago. I'm not sure I mind so much. I'm just not in a hurry to make a real commitment. I snap at him when he gets on my nerves. He usually backs down because he doesn't want to lose me. I'll admit, I do like this advantage. Asmodeus keeps watch at the club, taking me home every evening and never being far from me, taking residence at a condo nearby. Having sampled my blood and power over the years, he craves more, wanting to be my new mate and husband. He feels it is his right, after all, but I refuse to exchange blood with him. Like I said, I'm in no hurry to commit. He's addicted to the abilities that my blood gives him. With my blood, he can fly completely, not just levitate, heal faster, hear and smell from miles away. However, I still have yet to choose anyone, so it gives Asmodeus hope that eventually I will choose him. For now, he is content to be my love and be a large part of my everyday life. It's nightfall and missing Henri again, as sometimes I do at night. Having Asmodeus around helps me with this. I miss him too, ma chérie, he whispers. I'm so wrapped up in my thoughts that I didn't even realize he was still in the room. He pulls me into his arms and kisses me, tasting the sweet metallic blood from my pierced lip. I have a tendency to bite my lip when something is bothering me. Often, it draws blood. He sucks on my lip, savoring every drop. I don't really mind the stinging sensation, and I give in to his kiss and embrace. I want so badly to wash away the pain of losing Henri. I feel his lower body stiffen as I press my body to his. His desire and need is just as great as my own, but for different reasons. I enjoy this sexual energy and power exchange that flows between us. It's quite amazing. Sex energizes me. It soothes me, and I forget everything else, just content to ride that wave of passion and ecstasy. It is and has been my one addiction since the first time I experienced sex with Henri. Vampires rarely get addicted to things like drugs, but it doesn't stop them from being addicted to anything else, at least those that have addictive personalities as a human before they become vampires. Let me taste you, Dominique, he whispers, pulling away from my lips to kiss my neck. I shiver as his kisses set off little electric shocks through my entire body. The blood rushing through my veins excites him. His thoughts are full of lust, and not only for blood, but sex. He loves drinking my blood as he shoves himself inside me. This is his addiction, sex with me, and just like any drug addict, he craves it often. I know he wants my blood, though. He manages not to ask every time we have sex, since it's been a while, 2 months or more, maybe. I don't see the harm in allowing it. He never forces me, and if I say no, he will accept that and stop asking. As soon as I say yes, he picks me up and carries me to my bedroom. There he feeds from me, satisfying both of his appetites. The sex is slow and deliberate, taking his time to enjoy every part of me. I fight the urge to drink his blood. He's trying to convince me with his body to choose him as my mate. I can feel his desperation. He wears it like a tight-fitting jacket. It turns me off. Why do you hold back, ma chérie? He whispers as his hardness throbs inside me. It's too soon. I can't be sure. A moment or two of silence follows my reply. And he thinks it's his love for me that I'm unsure of. Je t'aime, don't you know that? Yes, I know he loves me in his own way, but I don't want to discuss it. I just wanted to comfort himself. Why can't he just let it go for now? I pull his face to mine and kiss him deeply, hoping the kiss is all I need to show him I love him too. It works. Human or vampire, a well-timed kiss can distract anyone. All questions leave his mind with that kiss, as if I've clouded his mind turning the tables on him, seducing him and turning him into a ball of need, desire, and lust. Moments later, he is deep inside me again, running harder, willing to do as much as he can. He fights not to lose control as his orgasm slams into him, taking me with him. I scream my release, kissing my head, neck, and shoulders. He slowly slides off me to lie at my side as I drift off to sleep. As I'm drifting, he stares at me. His shield is down, and his thoughts display themselves before me like a movie on a theater screen. I've loved you for a very long time, though I doubt you should be seen, Dominique. Why else would you hesitate in choosing? I've given you more than enough time to get over on me. How much more time could you need? He thinks about the time when I was a newly sired vampire, and Henri and I just had arrived in Paris. Ah, Dominique, I love how you marvel for things I took for granted. Traveling throughout Europe with you and Henri was amazing. Seeing it through your eyes said something deep inside me, something I thought longed at. Your laughter, the way your eyes sparkle when you get excited about something. Your innocence so long gone still reflects in your lovely green eyes. Well, I didn't know this about him. Perhaps I've misjudged him. My compassion for him is just one thing he doesn't understand, though. Me wanting to care for them, watch over them. Quietly remembers how much I cried in Belgium when I drained the young man by accident, killing him. Oh yes, sadly, I remember that too. Maybe my compassion stems from the fact that I still look, and in many ways, after Leonard, or other vampires can only do so after feeding on human blood. Not only do I recommend the human same day, but I blend in. If not for my fangs, no one would even know I'm a vampire. He envies this of me. He desires to walk in the daylight as I do, to feel the sun and not fear it. Poor Asmodeus, I wish I could give him that. He thinks being my mate will make him like me, but even Henri still died at dawn in the earth the entire time. Asmodeus must realize that. Though I am stronger than humans, I never use my strength to manipulate, intimidate, or frighten them unless they mean me harm. With me around, Asmodeus and Henri had no need for human service, though Asmodeus had one too. I took care of everything during the day, and Asmodeus put me in charge of the household staff in his villa. No one even knew I was a vampire, not for several years. Henri was leery of what the Blood Council would say or do if they viewed me as a threat. My unique abilities of walking in daylight and telepathy could mean trouble for us. Worst of all, they could take me from him. It is their right, after all, as the governing body of all vampires. Asmodeus sighs as he remembers the night they discovered me to be a vampire. Though I'm sleepy from a post-coital bliss, I continue to view his thoughts. I like the way he is remembering things so far. A human servant of the King of London, Lord Henry Bloodworth, Peter Higginbottom, insults me, calling me a black whore. After seeing me with Henri and Asmodeus, our arms linked outside the opera house during intermission, I remember the little bugger having quite the crush on me and Asmodeus. But Asmodee, as I like to call him, didn't realize that. He's not sexually intimate at all. Peter further insults me by saying I'm only fit to scrub the floor, not to consort with the wealthy and aristocratic society of London. I remember wanting to beat his little ass, but wouldn't have been ladylike of me. Appearances and proper social etiquette reign supreme, so I didn't have a choice then. But let me catch that rascal now and I'd kick his ass for sure. Perhaps even rip out his throat, for good measure. It doesn't help that Lord Henry does nothing to corrupt his servant, turning his nose up at the sight of me and my two escorts, Henri and Asmodeus. Reading his thoughts, I find out he thinks me a common whore, paid well for servicing the two gentlemen who stand arm in arm with me. He also figures I must really be special if two noblemen don't mind flaunting me before all of society. He would never do such a thing, but he definitely would have me in his bed every night doing many despicable things to me. I still shudder to think of it. Anyway, fed up with the miserable servant Peter, I went off. How dare you speak to me like that, you arrogant little brat. I'm his servant. Not his, well, actually, pardon me. I'm his wife, not his servant. I snap at him, pointing to Henri. Your master should teach you better manners or keep you on a leash. I'd grown weary and sickened at the way things were for a woman of color during those days. Ignorant people overlooked and dismissed when Henri and I were together, assuming me to be either his servant or his mistress. I held my anger back long enough. Before Henri could stop me, I flashed my fangs. I thought I could at least scare the little brat into thinking twice about messing with me. I could feel my eyes go dark green as I narrowed my gaze with anger, showing him I wasn't just a human, and least of all, a human servant. Because of this, I outranked him. Asmodeus scowls in anger, ready to fight as Henri removed his arm from me to hold him back. Asmodeus didn't care if the vampire that stood before him was the king and Peter his servant. If not for Henri, Asmodeus would have torn out the young boy's throat already. I must admit, I agree with Asmodeus, but Henri, always being so diplomatic, didn't want to stir up trouble. Sometimes a woman just needs to know her man will defend her. I'd fight by his side, too. Yet Henri shows me his displeasure at my outburst by giving me a harsh look. This isn't my fault. That little brat started it. I ignore his disapproving look. You styled this girl? Lord Henry beside himself with disbelief. He's unsure which is worse, Henri marrying me or Henri making me a vampire. Henri should know better. Especially regarding his place in human society, such it was. As for Peter, the servant boy, he couldn't believe his eyes. Ah, yes. The look on his face is payment enough for his disrespect of me. He'd just seen me at the marketplace this morning, which is why he assumed I was a human servant. How is this possible? I just saw you during the day, I did. A vampire who walks about in daylight, you say? Surely the Blood Council should hear about this, Lord Henry exclaims. His pale face is a mix of disdain and intrigue, and with his rather boorish face out of the way, it's hard to tell. Listening to his thoughts, I find I intrigue him after all, forgetting my race, focusing more on the fact that I'm a daywalking vampire. What did you say your name was, sir? I didn't, Henri growls. He doesn't like anyone to give me a hard time, but he also fears the Blood Council. It's Henri Toussaint of the Afra bloodline. His vampire lineage impresses Lord Henry. Afra is one of the eldest of vampire bloodlines, a royal one at that. It surprises him as the Afra usually side people of African descent, and Henri is Caucasian and French. Imagine that. People of color being royalty. Yet this vampire is a racist. Perhaps he has only become a vampire in this century. Lord Henry tells us he is of the Otto clan, a non-royal clan of vampires. Henry is outranked. I believe he is a social climber among the vampire hierarchy because now he offers his friendship to Henri. He assumes Asmodeus is Henri's bodyguard, a fact that poor Asmodeus doesn't take well. Asmodeus is also of the Otto clan bloodline. He has no respect for Lord Henry. Mr. Toussaint, sir, why don't you and your wife come join me in the box for the second half? Henri felt wary, but agreed since Lord Henry is the vampire king of London, and he figures it better not to make waves any more than we already have, judging by the crowd of vampires that stand around us, watching and whispering. It upset Asmodeus that Henri agreed. He would have preferred to fight, challenging and killing the king. And he would become the new king, killing that nasty human servant for disrespecting me. I can't fault him for that, but there is wisdom in what Henri has done, defusing what could have been a bad situation. Being of a royal bloodline, Henri could have had his choice of where to rule. However, he wants the freedom of travel, not the responsibility of owning territory. In hindsight, I think some of that rubbed off on me. I've talked my way out of more than fights. Much more than I've even thought. But when it counts, I fight and win. I ended up meeting with the Vampire Council anyway, as Lord Henry just couldn't keep his big mouth shut. Even after he promised Henri he would keep this quiet, it seemed the daywalking vampire was just too good of a secret to keep. And being the brown-nosing vamp that he was, he put him in the good graces of the council. I wondered how he even became a vampire king, the backstabbing blabbermouth. Thank you for listening tonight as I read the couple of chapters from my first vampire novel, The Grande Dame of Bourbon Street, part of my Dominique Leroy novel, or rather vampire novel series. And I hope that you will run out and get it because it is a great series, and book two will be The Blood Bonds of Dominique, which will be released in 2023. So, as always, thank you for listening. And I wish you peace, blessings, and love. Have a good evening. You've been listening to The Mahogany Says Show on Blog Talk Radio with host Mahogany Silverain at mahoganysilverain.net. Thank you and good night.